Chapter 7, October 18th, Part 2. We buried Mr. Seven by candlelight next to Briar Rose's grave. Morgan sobbed, and her son struggled to keep her on her feet. Their love was short but intense, and I feel very bad for her. It doesn't help that the decorations from the wedding are still hanging on everything. No one has the heart to take them down. Everyone said a few words about Mr. Seven, even Daphne, who cried and cried. Everyone, that is, except Uncle Jake. The little man's death seemed to open a fresh wound inside him. He stood in the back of the crowd, more upset than ever. Charming spoke of his old friend. I wish I had a digital recorder so I could play it back and listen again, but I'll write down what I remember. He said, "Seven was a giant of patience and consideration. He was as quick with a smile as he was with a caring ear. He took care of me for many years, and I am, admittedly, a difficult man to handle. He was my friend, my counsel, and at times my brother. I hardly imagine I could have become a man without him. Goodbye, old friend." When it was all over, the wicked queen took one of the white roses from Briar's plot and planted it on Seven's grave. As happened when they buried Briar, it sprouted hundreds of flowers, which bloomed in the moonlight. Everyone is miserable, but more than that, they are afraid. No one ever thinks that a friend will die, especially at the hands of someone like Atticus. Bunny has promised her daughter and the prince answers about Atticus, and she's asked Daphne, Puck, and me to help, since we had a run-in with him in the Book of Everafter. I wonder how they will take it.
"He's your brother," Bunny said to the prince. "That's impossible," Charming said. "I'm an only child."
"Because that's how I wanted you to be," she replied.
Sabrina watched the confusion on Charming's face. He stood up and paced around the log cabin. Snow stood back in confused paralysis. Bunny continued.
"Just listen, please. What I'm going to tell you is complicated, and you need to pay attention. This is the story of your life, William. The story of your real life. A long time ago, your parents, King Thorn and Queen Catherine, had two children." Charming jumped forward.
"Wait! Shut up!" Bunny snapped.
"The youngest was you, and the firstborn was a boy named Atticus. And he was the heir to your father's throne. Your father arranged a marriage between his kingdom and my own. It was a very common practice at the time, and helped grow wealth and power. Snow was our princess."
"But I grew up in a village," Snow argued.
Bunny sighed impatiently. "What I didn't know when I consented to this marriage was that Atticus was cruel and vicious. Royalty must often find themselves in loveless marriages, but Atticus was different. I soon learned he was known for killing stable hands and torturing kitchen maids. But when he turned his rage on my daughter, I got involved. William, I went to your father and begged him to stop your brother, but he refused to see the wickedness in his child. While he dithered like a fool, Atticus abused Snow in unspeakable ways. So I took matters into my own hands. I went to the Book of Everafter."
"The Book of what?" Charming said.
Both he and Snow looked at the witch like she had lost her mind.
"What is this bedtime story you are spinning, Bunny?"
Sabrina could tell the witch was losing patience with their interruptions.
"The Book of Everafter is a magical collection of stories that was stored in the Hall of Wonders," Sabrina explained. "Every fairy tale from Little Red Riding Hood to, well, the two of you, is written in its pages."
"We were inside it," Daphne said, hefting the big book into Charming's lap. "It was kooky."
"Inside it?" Charming said.
He cracked it open and flipped through the pages.
"She said it was magic," Puck said.
"Yes, a person can go into the stories if they want to,
and they can change them," Bunny finished for Sabrina.
The nature of the book allows you to change the story the way you wish it would have happened. And if the change sticks, if the editor doesn't change it back, it becomes history, and the changes affect the real people those stories are based upon. It even changes how the world remembers the story. In order to save my daughter, I changed her story.
What does that have to do with us and that lunatic who killed Seven? Charming asked.
The world knows Snow's story as Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, but the original tale was called The Murderous Blood Prince. Snow gasped. I assume that didn't have a happy ending. How did you fix it, Bunny? Charming asked. His voice was stern and furious.
I erased Atticus from the story. Entirely.
Well, erased isn't the right word, Sabrina said. More like edited.
Yes, that's right. I rewrote him.
Or at least I tried. I went through his story and tried to write events that would destroy the evil in him and make him a hero instead. But nothing I did worked. I wrote a mentor into the story that he could learn great things from, but he slit the man's throat. I gave him a loving fairy godmother who looked after him, and he pulled her wings off and threw her into a fire. Nothing I did could change the darkness inside him, and nothing I did stopped him from murdering my daughter. So I did what writers call a page one rewrite. I got rid of the original story and started over.
Well, if you got rid of him, then who was that man out there? Charming demanded.
Billy, please calm down, Snow said.
I will not calm down. My best friend was just murdered, and your mother has something to do with it. Haven't you brought enough pain on us, Bunny? First the poisoned apples, and now this?
I deserve some of your condemnation, but I ask you to just let me finish before you throw any more insults at me.
Charming snarled and roughly sank back into his chair.
So, I started my daughter's story all over again, but even that was difficult. What happened to Snow with Atticus was so intense that echoes of it invaded the new story. I tried a variety of approaches. I wrote a version with your sister Rose where you spent the entire story dancing on flowers. I gave you a kingdom made of starlight. I even tried to make it simple and have you be a maiden on a sea voyage. But each change I made still ended in tragedy. No matter what I did, the book would not allow it to work. Each time something horrible and unexpected would happen to you. It was as if the book were demanding that you experience pain. And then I realized what you needed was a defender, someone to rescue you from these problems. So I took Atticus's brother, William, and made him into a proper suitor for my daughter.
Made me? Charming said.
Yes. I had to edit you as well. You weren't what anyone would call princely at the time, Bunny said.
Charming looked at her incredulously.
Actually, you were a bit of a playboy, and you had a tendency to spend too much money and drink a little too much wine, but you had a good heart. You were someone I could work with. So with a few simple words, I wrote you into the story and made you into a dashing hero on a white horse. I wrote you so that you were regal and dignified, romantic and strong. I turned you into the perfect man for my daughter, and yet that was still not enough. Tragedy happened again and again and again until I figured out what the problem was. Atticus was still in the story. No more than a hint, an echo. But he was there, hovering in the margins, subtly influencing the outcome. And the answer came to me as clear as day. The story demanded a villain. It wanted something to replace Atticus. I don't pretend to understand how it works. I just know that's what it needed. But I needed a villain I could control, someone who wasn't bent on killing my daughter. So I did what any mother who loved her child would do to save her life. I wrote myself into the book as the Wicked Queen.
As the story's dark enchantress, I could manage the tragedy and control the pain. And it worked. The book was satisfied, even when my inventions were ridiculous. I mean, what kind of witch gets upset because her daughter is better looking? And that ridiculous poisoned apple? Ha! Putting you to sleep so that you could be woken by a handsome prince and live happily ever after? How diabolical. But it didn't matter. The story had its villain, its dashing hero, and a main character that experienced tragedy. And I thought the horror of Atticus Charming was behind us. Except you lost your daughter, Snow said. I have hated you for hundreds of years. Bunny nodded. A small price to pay to keep you safe. Snow's eyes were distant, as if she were looking back over the course of her entire life. She reached out and took her mother's hand. Charming, however, was clearly not ready for a family reunion. What am I? He whispered. I'm not sure what you're asking, Bunny said. I'm not real. I'm your creation. You twisted me into whatever suited your needs. Nothing that I am is me. I'm a fairy tale.
Billy, that's not true, Snow said.
And how does Seven play into this? Charming demanded.
For some reason, the dwarfs knew the world had changed. They confronted me and demanded that I change it back. Mr. Seven was the only one who saw my point of view. He realized what I had done was for the better. It created a terrible rift between him and the others, but he stood his ground. He agreed to look after you and Snow and make sure our secret remained that way. He was also there to keep an eye out for Atticus, in case he found a way to return. And lastly, he was there to keep you on the path of being a good person, especially when my daughter refused to marry you. I was worried how you might react when life got in the way of the qualities I wanted you to have. Do I even love your daughter? Charming said. Or is that one of your inventions? William, it explains an awful lot, woman. Why I couldn't get over Snow after hundreds of years apart, my failed marriages, my obsession with rebuilding a kingdom for us to live in. I made this castle because of that desire. Tell me if it's real or not. Bunny looked to the floor.
I can't say whether it's real or not, William. All I can say is it's what I wanted.
Charming got up from his chair and stormed out of the cabin.
Billy!
Snow chased after him, and Sabrina and Daphne followed. They watched him stomp across the courtyard toward the front gate.
Where are you going?
I don't know, he said.
He turned to look at the castle he had built. There was disgust in his eyes.
You can't leave, Sabrina said. These people need you. You're their leader.
They'll find another.
And what about me?
Snow said. While the drawbridge lowered, Charming turned to her.
Your mother invented me to be the perfect man for you, Snow. She made me love you. She made me heroic. She made me up. I can't trust my feelings for you. I can't trust why I'm here. I don't know who I am.
You're William Charming, Snow said.
And who is he?
He's the man I love, she said.
You're in love with a person who doesn't exist, in a town full of people who aren't supposed to be real. I'm the one that's a fantasy.
Charming walked through the iron gate and across the bridge. Everyone followed him, but he was soon swallowed by the forest and vanished. Snow raced to the edge of the woods and begged him to return, but he was gone. The cold, misty dampness returned with the morning. The gray sky hung low and felt binding, like an outgrown jacket. It was the kind of weather that made bones ache, and it was the absolute wrong weather for a group of people suffering from death and insecurity. The Pied Piper slouched on a bench, sipping from a mug of coffee. Nurse Spratt was too tired to say good morning. Everyone moved slowly, as if each step were painful. Even Daphne looked puffy-eyed and tired, and she could usually sleep through anything. If there was any good news, it was that Mordred and the pigs had finished the castle, and aside from a few evil doors that slammed in people's faces, it was ready for everyone to move in. Finding rooms to fit everyone's tastes kept people busy and their minds off of Seven's death and Charming's departure. But as soon as everyone had gathered in the castle's dining hall, the sour mood returned. Geppetto stood.
"I've decided to dismantle the cabins," he announced to the crowd. "This is a big castle, and we're going to need wood to keep it warm, especially since cold weather is coming. Right after breakfast, we can get started."
"We can't stay here, Geppetto," the Pied Piper said. "We need to find a place to hide."
"Hide?"
the three blind mice cried.
"You said we would be safer if we joined you," the Frog Prince said.
"And you would have been if there were a few hundred more of you,"
the Scarecrow said.
"Our plan didn't work. We don't have the numbers to go up against Mirror or that Atticus lunatic."
"Even Charming has left, and he's the most stubborn man I've ever met," Nurse Sprat said. "This was his plan, this whole army, and now he's gone. Now we're being led by a couple of little girls."
Mallow Barb agreed.
"Maybe Charming has the right idea. Maybe we should just get lost."
"He'll come back," Goldie said.
"And what if he doesn't?"
the Cowardly Lion growled.
"I took a big risk turning my back on the Hand. When they find us, they will be especially hard on those who betrayed the Master."
Puck kicked Sabrina's leg under the table.
"Say something,"
he muttered under his breath. Sabrina shrugged.
"What am I going to say?" "They need a pep talk," he shot back. "You're their leader."
"I think they're right."
Puck slammed his hand down on the tabletop, and it rattled as if it had been struck with a sledgehammer. Everyone turned their attention to him as he leaped from his chair.
"It doesn't matter if he comes back. We don't need him. Most of you were there when the mirrors spoke. Sabrina and Daphne are going to fix this, so stop your belly aching."
The crowd rolled their eyes and muttered amongst themselves. Puck looked ready to continue his speech until they heard a commotion from outside the wall. Everyone raced outside as the drawbridge descended, and a crowd of ever-afters marched into the courtyard, led by Uncle Jake.
"More Scarlet Hand members have joined the cause," Uncle Jake crowed. "It seems as if the plan is working."
But Sabrina and the others were hardly excited by the new recruits. Jake had brought Cinderella and her husband Tom, both quite elderly, as well as their three mice servants. Behind them was Chicken Little, a pot-bellied robot from Oz named Tick-Tock, a giant caterpillar, and the Cheshire Cat from Wonderland, followed by the incredibly thin Ichabod Crane, Rapunzel, fewer than a dozen munchkins, all well on in years, the old woman who lived in a shoe, and 100 dirty-faced, shoeless children. As the drawbridge began to close, Rip Van Winkle hobbled in on his cane, nearly tripping over his beard. Sabrina's heart sank. Looking at them, she felt the pressure of the prophecy even more.
"We need to prepare for war. Who's with me?"
Puck continued. But no one responded. They were just as disheartened as Sabrina.
"This army gets more and more pathetic by the second,"
Pinocchio grumbled.
While the new recruits were welcomed, Puck pulled Sabrina and Daphne aside.
"It's time to tell everyone your plan," Puck said.
"We don't have a plan,"
Sabrina said.
"Duh, but they don't need to know that. Just fake it until you make it. That's what I do. Most of the time I have no idea what I'm doing, but if I told everyone, they wouldn't put their faith in me."
"Actually, we are all pretty sure you never know what you're doing," Daphne said.
"Listen, these people need heroes, and whether it makes any sense or not, you're it," Puck preached. "As a ruthless villain, I have had my fair share of run-ins with do-gooders, and I've noticed a thing or two about them. They aren't confused or unsure of themselves. You have to be confident. If someone asks you a question, answer them, even if you don't know what you are talking about. The secret is to sound sure.
If they say, hey, losers, is the moon made out of cheese? The two of you say, it is, I've been there. I ate part of the Sea of Tranquility, and it was delicious.
So being a hero is being a good liar? Daphne said.
Puck nodded. Now you're getting it.
I'm not going to lie. Let one of the grown-ups speak, Sabrina said. They don't want to hear from us.
Puck looked angry enough to pull out his own hair.
I can't believe you! You know what? I'm seriously reconsidering marrying you.
His wings popped out of his back and he was in the air and gone before Sabrina could once again inform him that they were never getting married. Geppetto joined Pinocchio near Sabrina.
We should prepare some rooms for them, son.
Pinocchio rolled his eyes.
Papa, now that the army is growing, maybe we can assign them my chores. Many of them can split wood and heat water for washing.
Everyone the works,
the old man said, looking at his son with disappointment.
That's what being a grown-up is about. You want to become a man, correct?
But are there not many different types of work?
Pinocchio argued, his words getting shriller with each passing second.
Should those with the genius-level intellect dig ditches alongside the ancient and feeble-minded? I should be working on things that take advantage of my learning and world experience. Mr. Canis is really quite useless in the fight. He could make beds and...
Geppetto snatched his son by one of his ears and dragged him toward the castle. Unfortunately, Mr. Canis and Red had heard every insulting word.
Come along, little one,
Mr. Canis said to the little girl with a sigh of surrender.
There are beds to make.
Red slipped her hand into his. He looked down at it, but did not pull away. Together, they wandered toward the castle. As the day passed, more recruits trickled in to join the cause. Among the most welcome were Robin Hood and his band of merry men, which included Will Scarlet, Little John, and Friar Tuck. King Arthur and his knights soon followed, with news that the Scarlet Hand was suffering from a wave of paranoia. Both the merry men and the knights were concerned that they would soon be exposed as spies. Making a break for the castle seemed to be the best strategy. As the recruits were initiated into the camp and given rooms in the castle, the Scarecrow came to find Sabrina and Daphne.
Ready for your next class?
Sabrina groaned.
You're not going to teach us how to fight, are you?
The Scarecrow shook his head.
Not at all. I'm going to teach you military strategy. You may not know this, but I was once the Emperor of Oz. I had to defend the city from attacks.
How did that go?
Daphne asked. I was overthrown by an army of little girls with knitting needles, the Scarecrow admitted. But right now, I'm the best you've got. They went into the Hall of Wonders and then into the mirror room. Inside, the guardians were waiting.
All right, girls, take a seat. I've got to give you 10,000 years of war in an afternoon,
the Scarecrow said. He turned to the mirrors and smiled.
I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a mental workout.
Sabrina and Daphne listened as the straw man used the mirrors to illustrate important military campaigns throughout the history of the world. Each mirror became an audio-visual display, showing portraits of battlefields and grand paintings of military leaders. Sabrina learned of Gustavus Adolphus's brilliant invasion of northern Germany in 1630, and how his combination of artillery, soldiers, and horses became the template for most modern war strategies. He even turned Sweden into one of the most powerful nations in the world. The Scarecrow talked about Caesar's invasion of Gaul in 58 BC, which was the first domino to fall in Rome's conquest of the globe. A painting of Genghis Khan appeared in the mirrors as the Scarecrow lectured about the Mongol invasion of China in 1218. Sabrina learned the strategies of leaders like Alexander the Great, Frederick the Great, Hannibal, and Napoleon. Then the Scarecrow discussed how small groups of soldiers had managed to defeat huge armies. He pointed out that 300 Spartans beat back thousands during the Battle of Thermopylae in 480 BC by bottlenecking the army into a small space. He showed how Custer's army was brought down at the Battle of the Little Bighorn by a small number of Indians who drove them into a canyon. He finished his lecture for the night with the American Revolutionary War, in which the military fought off a much bigger invading force by using the terrain to their advantage. By the time he was finished, Sabrina's head was so filled with facts, she thought her brain was at war with itself. "Any questions?" the Scarecrow asked. Just then, the door flew open, and a group of men pushed their way inside. The first was King Arthur, followed by Sir Galahad, then Sir Lancelot, Sir Kay, Sir Gawain, and a dozen other sirs. Then Robin Hood, Little John, and Will Scarlet made their way in. They argued noisily as they jockeyed to be at the front of the parade.
"We were told that there is war planning going on in here," King Arthur said.
"Not at all," the Scarecrow said, but he was ignored. "We demand to participate," Robin Hood shouted. Henry pushed his way into the crowded room. "What is this about?" Henry demanded.
"You have placed the fate of this army in the hands of little girls," Sir Lancelot roared. "Now we're told they're in this room plotting strategy."
"It's madness," Little John said.
"What can children know about planning a battle?" Sir Kay asked.
"Send them away and we'll take over,"
King Arthur said. The guardians of the mirrors appeared. Arden, the beauty with deer antlers, shook her head.
"These little girls will save the world, gentlemen. It is prophecy."
King Arthur's face turned beet red.
"This is no game, witch. We know what the master is capable of, and no mere child is going to lead the charge against him and his hand."
"Arthur, you're not needed in here," Henry said.
"Your family is filled with insolent whelps," Arthur said. "You all believe you know better. You all think you're so wise. Well, look around you, Henry. How are your big ideas working out for you now?"
Henry stepped up to Arthur until they were nearly nose to nose.
"I said go."
"Dad, let them stay," Sabrina said. "Let them all stay. He's right. We don't know what we're doing. If anyone in the camp has experience in combat, I need to know about it. I think Arthur and Robin and their men could be a big help."
"Then there is an ounce of sense in this family after all," Arthur said, then turned to the mirrors. "I need to see maps of the town."
His request magically materialized.
"Whatever you were planning on doing, forget it. It's obvious what you should do. We need to attack in the very center of town with something big and shocking. When the rest of Han's goons hear about it, they will come running. When they do, we'll be ready for them. We'll surround the town, cram them all into a small space, and pick them off one by one. Henry, take your girls. Robin and our men will let you know when the details of the plan are ready to be announced."
Sabrina, Daphne, and Henry left the Scarecrow behind and stepped into the Hall of Wonders. Outside the door, they found Pinocchio sitting with his back to the wall.
"They're crazy," Pinocchio said. "Their plan is pure drivel. I've heard better plans for going to the bathroom."
"And you can do better?" Sabrina said.
"Of course I can," Pinocchio said. "Anyone who has ever read a book of military history can tell you it's better to stay hidden than in small groups. You should surprise them and capture them one by one. It's very similar to the strategy of General Marion during the American Revolutionary War. They called him the Swamp Fox because his soldiers attacked from within the swamps of South Carolina, then sank back."
"And we should trust that you have our best interests at heart because," Sabrina said. Pinocchio's face turned red, but instead of lashing out, he got to his feet.
"Well, I tried," he said, then walked toward the portal.
Sabrina felt a little guilty for her attitude, but at the same time, could she really trust Pinocchio? His past was a distraction she didn't need. Besides, Arthur and Robin Hood were leaders. They knew better than a couple of little kids. Just having them in discussing the plan gave her a sense of security. No, she was right. The army needed the smartest people devising the best plans. She and her sister went back to their room in the castle to wait. The discussion went through the night and into the morning, but Sabrina was too anxious to sleep. Instead, she paced the room while Elvis watched from beneath a blanket on the bed he shared with Daphne. The Scarecrow came to them in the morning and led them back to the mirror room, where they were told that Robin Hood's plan was considered the best of several approaches. She didn't understand most of it, but she didn't have to. She had no physical role in the actual battle. All she had to do was put her stamp of approval on it, and the men would take care of the rest. After breakfast, she gathered her army and announced that on that very night, they would engage the Scarlet Hand in the middle of the town square. Then she turned over the conversation to King Arthur, who explained the plan in finer detail. Sabrina marveled at his command of the crowd. Like Charming, he had a natural charisma that made people want to follow him. She saw the same thing in Robin Hood and felt herself lucky to have two experienced people helping her with her destiny. When Arthur finished, Sabrina asked everyone to get as much rest as they could, but that at dinner time they should meet in the yard with whatever weapons they had. She watched the crowd disperse, some faces filled with eagerness and others with dread. And then there was only Puck, who stood staring at her, arms crossed, with a face full of disgust. What? Puck rolled his eyes.
Would you let me know exactly when it's my time to come and rescue you from this fight so that I can be ready?
Sabrina threw her hands up in the air.
What is it with you?
Puck's wings popped out of his back and fluttered like a hummingbird's.
Never mind, he said, lifting off the ground.
Sabrina was tired of Puck's attitude. She wanted an explanation. She jumped in the air just as he was about to fly away and snatched him by the pant leg.
Let me go, Bubblehead, he demanded.
Not until you tell me why you're so moody, she said.
Puck tried to shake her off, but he couldn't.
Let me go!
Not a chance, bug boy,
Sabrina said. And then she was rocketing into the sky, hanging on with all her might.
Puck! Put us down!
You had your chance, loser,
the boys said, as they sailed over the castle and out into the woods, skimming the tops of trees.
Puck! I was up all night. I'm too tired to hold on,
Sabrina cried. Her arms felt like rubber bands stretching to the point of snapping. She looked down. Too far. She would never survive the fall.
Wah, wah, wah! Help me! Save me!
Puck mocked.
Puck, please, put me down,
Sabrina said. Her lack of sleep and the surge of panic was causing black spots to appear in front of her eyes.
Poor donkey face can never do anything for herself, Puck said.
And then her aching fingers gave way, and she fell. The air whipped through her hair, and she saw the tops of trees pass her, and then a limb smashed into her leg. She opened her mouth to cry out, but the wind stole the sound. She was sure the next thing that slammed into her would be the ground, but then something had her, something warm and soft and strong. She looked up just as Puck set her on the ground. He looked angry.
Don't you ever do that again.
I told you I was too tired to hold on, Sabrina said.
Well, then stop being too tired to hold on, Puck said.
What's wrong with you?
I could ask you the very same question, Puck said. In fact, I will. What's wrong with you?
Sabrina sighed. She didn't have the energy to fight with Puck. She needed to get to bed.
Puck, just tell me. I'm exhausted.
What's wrong is how you just gave up, Puck said.
Huh?
Every time I think you're going to stop being pathetic, you just throw in the towel and surrender, he said.
Sorry to be such a disappointment, she replied as she dusted herself off.
She looked around the woods, unsure of where she was or which direction to walk.
Ever since you came crawling into my life, you have done nothing but complain about your lack of control.
No one listens to me. No one pays attention. Everyone treats me like a child. Boo-hoo-hoo!
Well, of course they treat you like a kid, because every time you get a chance to grow up, you choke. Look who's talking. I'm a trickster. I'm supposed to act like a child. It's in my blood. You, on the other hand, don't want to grow up because you enjoy having everyone look after you.
Sabrina wasn't too tired to be angry. She picked a direction and stomped away from the boy fairy without a word. He followed close behind.
Look at what's happened since you came to town. You've come face to face with every kind of monster there is, and I've lived to tell the tale, she shouted.
Because someone else had to save you, Sabrina. It's been me, or Canis, or your grandmother, or your uncle. But now, when you've got the chance to actually take control, you hand it over to those nutters, Arthur and Hood.
I know you can't possibly understand this with that tiny pea brain of yours, but we're in the middle of a war, and I need help from people who know what they're doing. I can't run around using your fake-it-until-you-make-it approach. People will die.
Puck leaped over her and landed in her path.
I'm sorry, but you were at the whole Mirror's speaking prophecy thing, right? They said that you would lead this army, not the king, not the thief. You. Hey, I don't like it any better than you do, but the Mirrors see the future, and they say you're the star of this show.
I don't know what I'm doing, Sabrina said.
When it comes to saving the world, no one knows what they're doing, Puck said. But they don't pass it off onto someone else when it's their responsibility. The old lady is out there in those woods, and you are going to place her life in the hands of people who don't care about her?
Sabrina, it is supposed to be you. If it wasn't, the Mirrors would have said so.
Sabrina pushed past him and kept on walking toward where she thought the castle must be.
Well, I know one thing I don't need help doing, telling you to go jump in the river. The old lady would expect more from you, he shouted after her.